The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include: parents in North Carolina can still get a $335 remote learning stimulus, and millions could see lower health costs under stimulus package. And we'll begin with parents in NC can still get $335 remote learning stimulus. Parents in North Carolina who didn't already receive a $335 check to help offset the cost of remote learning for their kids still have time to apply for the money. The checks are part of the 2020 CARES Act coronavirus relief packages. The federal government originally gave North Carolina around $440 million for it, but the state wasn't able to spend all of it. Part of the complication was that some parents were automatically sent the money, but others weren't. Many of the people who didn't automatically get the money are low-income families who now have to fill out an application for it. The deadline to apply is May 31st. People are eligible if they have had a child under the age of 16 in 2019 and lived in North Carolina. Go to www.ncdor.gov/extra credit to apply for the $335 checks. People who claimed a child dependent on their taxes in 2019 should have already gotten the money, but for those who didn't make enough to file taxes or who haven't gotten the money even though they did, an application is necessary to get the money. The deadline to apply was initially at the end of 2020, but the NC General Assembly unanimously passed a bill that Governor Roy Cooper signed into law, extending the deadline to May 31st. It's only fair to give them the opportunity to apply for it. Senator Brett Jackson, a Sampson County Republican and a top state budget writer, previously State Auditor Beth Wood's office released a report Tuesday detailing how the state has spent the money from last year's CARES Act. The federal government sent North Carolina $3.6 billion in that relief package, and Wood found that by the end of 2020, state officials had spent around 94% of the money. As a result of Governor Cooper's and the North Carolina General Assembly's leadership, North Carolina is recovering from this pandemic, said Charlie Peruse, the director of the Office of State Budget and Management in the audit. Of the other 6% of the money, some has been spent in early 2021, some has been returned to the federal government, and some is still waiting to be spent. For the $335 checks for parents specifically, Wood's audit found there's about $62 million that the state would send back to the federal government if parents don't apply for it by the end of May. That's enough money for 185,000 families to apply if they haven't already received the checks. For more North Carolina government and politics news, listen to the Under the Dome Politics podcast from the News and Observer and the NC Insider. Next, U.S. economy added 916,000 jobs in March. The U.S. economy added 916,000 jobs last month as vaccine distribution improved. Congress approved a $1.9 trillion stimulus package, and states lifted restrictions on businesses. The unemployment rate edged down to 6% from 6.2% in February, according to the monthly report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The report comes a year after the pandemic threw the U.S. economy into a tailspin. The labor market recovered about 12 million of the 22 million jobs lost in the first 2 months of the pandemic by October, but pace of the recovery slowed through the winter as the virus surged through the holidays and into the new year. But the March data, the largest number of jobs added since August, and the third straight month of growth may signal a turning point. The survey was taken the week of March 12th, the same week that the stimulus package passed by Democratic majorities in the House and Senate was signed into law by President Joe Biden. "This is a wonderful report. Hopefully we will have many more months like it ahead," said Nick Bunker, the economic research director at Indeed, a jobs listing service. "It's fantastic to see the big bounce back in job gains." The increase was driven by gains in industries that have been among the hardest hit by the pandemic. The leisure and hospitality sectors added 280,000 jobs last month as coronavirus restrictions eased around the country. Most of that increase, about 176,000 jobs, came from hiring at restaurants, bars, and other food service establishments. Arts, entertainment, and recreation facilities gained 64,000 jobs, and hotels about 40,000. The sector still remains about 3 million jobs short of where it was before the pandemic. Elsewhere, employment rose 126,000 in public education at the state and local levels and 64,000 in private education. Construction added 110,000 jobs after reporting a disappointing decline in February. Transportation and warehousing added 48,000 jobs, and retail added 23,000 jobs, driven by growth in clothing stores, motor vehicle and parts dealers, and furniture and home furnishing stores. There is much work to be done before the economy returns to its pre-pandemic strength. There are still about 8.5 million less jobs now than in February 2020, and that doesn't include the growth in the labor market that would have likely occurred over the last year under normal circumstances. Next, stocks end slightly below latest record highs as technology slips. The U.S. stock indices gave up some of their recent gains Monday, pulling the S&P 500 slightly below the record high it hit last week. Technology, communication, and energy stocks weighed on the market, outweighing gains by a broad mix of companies, including banks and those that rely directly on consumer spending, such as Nike and Chipotle. Bond yields inched higher after easing most of last week. Investors have been focusing on the economic recovery as well as the risk higher inflation posed to consumers and companies. Those concerns have helped push up bond yields for much of this year. Monday's pullback snapped a three-day winning streak for the benchmark S&P 500, which closed out last week with its third straight weekly gain. It's this back and forth as the market tries to figure out how strong the economy is going to be and how long it's going to last, said Tom Martin, senior portfolio manager with Globalt Investments. The S&P 500 slipped 0.81 points, or less than 0.1%, to 4,127.99. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 55.20 points, or 0.2%, to 33,745.40. The tech-heavy NASDAQ Composite lost 50.19 points, or 0.4%, to 13,850. The S&P 500 and Dow each set record highs on Friday. Small company stocks, which have been outgaining the broader market this year, also fell. The Russell 2000 Index of smaller companies gave up 9.69 points, or 0.4%, to 2,233.78. The index is up 13.1% so far this year, while the S&P 500, which tracks large companies, is up 9.9%. Technology stocks were the biggest drag on the market. Apple fell 1.3% and Google's parent company slid 1.1%. The sector has been choppy as investors shift money to other industries that could see solid gains as the economy recovers. Rising bond yields have also made technology stock values look pricey after months of big gains. The yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury note, which influences interest rates on mortgages and other loans, inched up to 1.67%. It ended Friday at 1.66% and had been as high as 1.75% last Monday. Traders are showing cautious optimism about the economic recovery, especially in the U.S., where vaccine distribution has been ramping up and President Joe Biden has advanced the deadline for states to make doses available to all adults to April 19th. While many economists are projecting a strong economic rebound this year, some companies that stand to benefit from the reopening of the economy were among the decliners Monday. Cruise operators Carnival and Royal Caribbean fell 5.3% and 3.1% respectively. Nuance Communications soared 15.9% after Microsoft said it would buy the speech technology company for about $16 billion. Alibaba's U.S. listed shares jumped 9.3% after the Chinese conglomerate said it would restructure its Ant Group financial affiliate to placate Chinese government regulatory concerns. Wall Street will be watching company earnings reports this week, particularly several from big banks. J.P. Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo report on Wednesday, while Bank of America and Citigroup report later. Next, millions could see lower health costs under stimulus package. The $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package signed into law by President Joe Biden earlier this month includes health care subsidies that could make coverage more affordable for millions of Americans. Here is what to know. What's included? The American Rescue Plan includes a temporary increase in tax credits for many people who buy health insurance through the Affordable Care Act's marketplaces. Those credits will reduce the premiums that eligible Americans pay for coverage. Who is eligible? Almost everyone who buys health insurance through the marketplace. 92% of people who buy their own health insurance are eligible for a subsidy under the Affordable Care Act, the Kaiser Family Foundation found. Of that 8% who aren't getting a subsidy, those are really high-income people who would pay less than 8.5% of their income for a premium without a subsidy, Cynthia Cox, Kaiser Vice President, said during a webinar last week. Kaiser also found that 1.4 million uninsured people are newly eligible for subsidized marketplace coverage. What's different? Before the American Rescue Plan was passed, households were required to contribute as much as 9.83% of their income to pay for marketplace insurance premiums, and households with incomes more than 400% above the federal poverty level were not eligible for tax credits to help pay for coverage plans. Now, no households will be required to contribute more than 8.5% of the income to pay for coverage premiums, according to a fact sheet from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Those earning up to 150% of the federal poverty level will not be required to pay any premiums for a benchmark plan, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Previously, those earning 100% of the federal poverty level were required to contribute 2.07% of household income for a benchmark plan, and those earning 150% had to contribute 4.14%, according to Kaiser. Kaiser found that the number of people eligible for a subsidy has increased by 20%, mostly among those with incomes above 400% of the poverty level. Most of the people who are eligible for subsidies are still making below 400% of poverty, Cox said. The federal poverty level ranges from $12,880 for a one-person household to $26,500 for a household of four, and $44,600 and up for households with eight or more people. Why it matters. Premium cost will decrease by an average of $50 per person each month or $85 per policy per month, according to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Four out of five people who enroll will be able to find plans that cost no more than $10 a month after the premium tax credits, and half will be able to find a silver plan for $10 or less a month. More than 11.4 million people have enrolled in the marketplace, with California, Florida, North Carolina, and Texas home to the highest numbers of people enrolled, according to Kaiser. How much will it cost? The Congressional Budget Office estimates it will cost the federal government about $34 billion over the next 10 years, Cox said in the webinar, but cost will mostly be concentrated during the next 2 years because the changes are temporary. How the tax credits work. The increased credits are temporary and apply only in 2021 and 2022. The CMS says the tax credits are calculated based on a household's expected yearly income, the number of people filing taxes together in the household, the premium amount of the second lowest cost silver plan in the consumer's area in the marketplace. This is the benchmark plan cost used to calculate premium tax credits, it said. It's not related to which plan a consumer actually chooses to enroll in. How to take advantage. Those enrolling in marketplace coverage on healthcare.gov can take advantage of the changes starting April 1st. People already enrolled, including those who recently did so during the special enrollment period, can update their enrollments or applications starting then, according to the CMS. Those already enrolled before April 1st can wait until they file their taxes in 2022 to receive the additional credits when they file their 2021 taxes. However, we recommend all enrollees come in, update their application, and review their plan options during the 2021 special enrollment period through May 15. because you may be able to choose a plan with lower out-of-pocket cost for the same price or less than what you are currently paying, the CMS says. Those who don't have coverage and need it starting April 1st should apply and select a plan by the end of March and then come back after April 1st. Submit your application again and reselect your plan to have increased tax credits applied to your coverage for May 1st forward, the CMS says. People who live in states with their own marketplace should visit the state's marketplace website or call them for more information. Prices of inputs used by U.S. firms up most since 74. Inflation is already in full bloom for the U.S. manufacturers and many service providers. A below-the-radar data point in the Labor Department's Producer Price Index report on Friday showed the sharpest monthly spike in processed goods for so-called intermediate demand since 1974. These are goods and materials such as ball bearings, fuel, chemicals, steel, and plastics that are used to make other final demand products like automobiles and household goods. Such input cost jumped 4% in March from a month earlier and climbed 12.5% from a year earlier, which was the most since 2008. The gains show industries from automakers and home builders to consumer products makers and long-haul trucking firms are paying up for inputs. Higher prices for these inputs have the potential of being passed on to consumers and businesses, a development that adds to the inflation saga. Rising input prices reflect in part a strengthening of demand as the economy gets closer to putting the pandemic behind it. The Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago's latest index of business conditions in the region, released Monday, surged in March on the heels of stronger manufacturing activity. The survey also showed increased cost pressures, with 65% indicating higher materials prices, followed by 57% acknowledging more expensive shipping. Investors and data watchers will have another reading on price pressures Tuesday with the government's March Consumer Price Index report. The latest PPI report contained a wide array of rising prices for processed materials. Next, an opinion piece from Doyle McManus of the Los Angeles Times. This tax season, IRS hunts for underreported income. If you filled out your federal tax return by now, you may have noticed that Form 1040 includes a new question on top. Did you have any transactions in Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies last year? It's there because the Internal Revenue Service believes thousands of crypto holders have forgotten to report capital gains income from selling their electronic assets. And some might not have forgotten at all. Cryptocurrency, designed to be anonymous, is a favorite financial vehicle for drug traffickers and money launderers. But even if your income comes from criminal activity, you're still required to report it to the IRS. The IRS hunt for hidden Bitcoin is just one small corner of a vast tax revenue problem, underreported income. According to a recent study published by the National Bureau of Economic Research, the richest 1% of households are failing to report an estimated 21% of their income to the IRS, significantly more than previously believed. Another study by tax experts, including a former IRS commissioner, estimates that more than $600 billion in taxes on 2020 income will go undercollected. Cryptocurrency is only part of the problem. unreported offshore assets are another part. So are partnerships and other pass-through businesses, which are difficult for the IRS to audit. The total shortfall over the coming decade could reach $7.5 trillion, more than enough to pay for all of President Joe Biden's ambitious spending plans. So here's some unsolicited advice for Biden and Congress. Spend more money on the IRS. That's right, spend more to give the tax collectors a better chance to do their jobs. For almost 25 years, Republicans in a misguided campaign of anti-tax populism have been slashing the IRS budget. The agency's annual spending is more than 20% smaller in real dollars than it was 10 years ago, and its budget for audits and other tax enforcement is down even more. Its staff has been cut by more than 33,000. As a result, only 0.45% of tax returns were audited in 2019, about half the percentage audited in 2010. For pass-through businesses, the audit rate was even lower. Those enforcement cuts have been very visible. The agency might as well have sent taxpayers a notice that their chances of beating an audit were better than at any time in recent memory. IRS Commissioner Charles Rettig, a Beverly Hills, California tax attorney who was appointed by President Donald Trump, estimates that every additional dollar in IRS spending will produce about $6 in additional revenue. Economists outside the agency have projected that the returns could be as high as $14. Either way, that's a terrific return on investment. As a business proposition, it's a no-brainer. A company that thought it could recoup $6 in billings for every dollar spent would be hiring bill collectors by the dozen. Biden and his aides have seen those numbers, too. The president announced last week that he plans to pay for part of his big-ticket wish list by increasing IRS enforcement efforts directed at corporations and high-income individuals. But the most effective remedy must also include a broader effort to persuade more people to comply with their tax obligations. If you have to dig it out through audits, you're never going to get there, said Charles O. Rassorti, who served as IRS commissioner under Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, told me. Enforcement is expensive and time-consuming. We want the least amount of enforcement that's needed. What we really want is compliance. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Again, that is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to North Carolina Reading Service.